Hi, I'm Nicholas Carey, your host today, and welcome to the February Market Outlook on the Blockchain.com podcast. I'm the co-founder of Blockchain.com and the founding commissioner for the Blockchain Commission for Sustainable Development. I also authored The Future is Decentralized. Today, we'll be joined by my co-host, Dr. Garrick Heilman, the head of research here at Blockchain.com and one of the most cited cryptocurrency and blockchain technology researchers. Our special guest is Lewis Tough, the Vice President of Engineering at Blockchain.com, who's responsible for the technology underpinning all of our trading and execution services across the Blockchain.com platform and Blockchain.com exchange. Welcome.
Okay, so now the main event that we've all been looking forward to, our fireside chat with Lewis Tough, VP of Engineering at Blockchain.com. I'm going to stop sharing my screen so we can all see everyone. Lewis, welcome.
Hi, welcome. Thanks, guys. It's great to be here.
So sorry to pull you away from your keyboard and probably launching new features or fixing those pesky bugs. I was going to ask a few questions to start with, and then I know Garrick had probably some ones you wanted to follow up with too. So as you know, we have a tradition here at Blockchain.com. We always like to ask our teammates how they earned their first buck. And then we wanted to ask you the same and get a sense for how you got started and then what you're sort of focused on today.
Sure. Yeah, I think in terms of first pound being here in the UK in London, there's actually doing a paper round. And so the interesting thing here is actually I took on multiple paper rounds over a short period of time to save up to build my first computer. And so over a 6 month period, I managed to save up £100 per month. And then build my first computer at a young age. And that kind of got me started on the whole experience and journey.
That's pretty funny. The Anthony Scaramucci, who we interviewed yesterday, his first job was also doing a paper route. And now he has a $7 billion alternative investment fund. So anyway, looks like a good place to start. One of the questions I had, you've had an incredible career. You've worked at Goldman Sachs. You led trading teams at Revolut and built one of the first crypto engine trading systems there. What advice would you give to someone studying computer science today who's in university? You know, what advantage can they maybe develop over their contemporaries to make them competitive to joining a crypto industry?
Yeah, great question. I think the great thing about what we have now, all the introduction of technology and social networks over the last kind of 5 to 10 years, and the kind of proliferation of mobile first experiences, there's like more and more opportunities than ever before to join communities, discuss online around topics and key kind of areas of interest. So I think my advice would be get yourself out there, join one of these forums, whether it's Slack, whether it's like Discord, whether it's going on to kind of new Clubhouse, and checking out kind of and hanging out with like-minded individuals and just discussing these topics. I think kind of surrounding yourself by people that know way more than you do is one of the kind of fastest ways to accelerate your learning.
That is great advice. And I think finding those cohorts that, you know, challenge your thinking and that you can learn from is something if you can do across your entire career and life, you'll benefit from extraordinarily. I guess one of the questions I wanted to follow up with, and then I'm going to let Garrick pile in. In crypto, it seems like we're always having to build stuff that's like, we have to do it ourselves. And I guess if you had like a magic wand and you wanted to inspire some like young entrepreneur to go build something that would be useful for crypto companies, what would be something you would like, you wish you could pull off the shelf that like a lot of other firms could probably take advantage of instead of having to build things that are sort of unique just to us?
Yeah, I think actually the whole treasury management is a huge unsolved problem. And every company that we speak to, and including our own, has to kind of build out this huge amount of infrastructure to kind of operationalize at scale the movement of funds, whether that's fiat or crypto assets, between venues, between brokers, between bank accounts. And that is a huge problem. And it takes a lot of time, effort, and massive amount of teams and individuals to run that. So like, yeah, building a platform that aggregates that together and creates a very slick user experience that is kind of fully audited, has kind of governance, policies, controls, would be pretty interesting.
All right, you heard it. You heard it here first, entrepreneurs out there. Lewis is your first customer. All right, we'll pass it off to Garrick here. I know you had a bunch of questions.
Thanks, Nick. Lewis, so I really wanted to start with, your time both in crypto and comparing it to your time outside of crypto, and what's similar and what's different coming from Revolut and these other companies. You've worked in traditional big companies, a challenger bank, and now crypto. I think you have a really interesting perspective on kind of those three different kind of arenas, and we'd love to hear what's similar and what's different across those.
Sure. Yeah. I think the big thing for me, and one of the reasons why I jumped into this space, is that in my previous roles and the previous companies, you're always kind of building within the constructs and confines of existing frameworks that and existing institutions that have been built over many, many, many years and many decades in some cases. And so you can innovate within that, and you can reconfigure and create a new permutation. But I think the great thing about our space is that we are trailblazing. There's like no precedent. There's no path and road to follow. And we are truly able to kind of like flip everything on its head and start from scratch and think, actually, is the product that exists today really the best solution to the problem we're trying to solve? Or can we try an alternative measure and come up with a better result? I think for me, that's a super exciting challenge. And it's one where, yeah, for anyone that's kind of a builder, an original thinker, a problem solver, it's a great space to be in because no longer are the rules of the existing economy a constraint.
That's awesome. Shifting to maybe a topic that gets to some of the unique challenges to crypto. We have these kind of adoption cycles in crypto. There's been at least three, possibly four. We're going through one right now where a tsunami of market activity and new users come into crypto. We saw one, of course, in 2017, and then lesser ones, arguably in 2013 and maybe 2011, if that sounds about right, Nick. And I just wanted to ask you about these cycles that seem semi-unique to me to crypto, where you have these year or two-year troughs of activity, things are kind of relatively quiet, and then this explosion, and what kind of challenges that creates for folks like yourself building the plumbing, the infrastructure.
Yeah, I think a lot of companies that are building at scale do kind of see similar peaks and troughs. And that's not just kind of unique to the crypto industry, and it happens elsewhere. So like examples of social networks with everyone being interconnected globally, you suddenly have a viral video and you're gonna get massive amount of views on that and lots of traffic all concentrated to one website or one video stream or one bit of content. So I think like those kind of challenges do affect kind of many industries and many companies that are building at scale. And I think the key thing to note here is like, it's very much part of building out a reliable, robust distributed system that you should be able to absorb some shocks. So kind of a sudden spike in traffic, which then kind of subsides, is something you should be able to handle, and it's kind of part and parcel and fundamental to building out robust distributed systems. But I think the problem comes when that compounds and isn't sustained over time. And so then what you see is like some of the platforms struggling because any kind of small inefficiencies that you can kind of gloss over on a short time horizon suddenly become huge problems if that traffic lasts and sustains over kind of a week or a couple of weeks or multiple months.
Great, thank you for that perspective. Love to hear from you some of the things that you've enjoyed working on most since you came over to blockchain.com and the crypto space. We've done a number of really innovative things. Would love to hear more about those and some of your war stories around those new products and services we've built out.
Sure, great question. Yeah, I think for me, being able to lower the barrier to entry to getting individuals globally exposure to cryptocurrencies has been a hugely exciting challenge. And I think with some of our brokerage products and swap, we've been able to do that at a global scale. And that's pretty unique because, yeah, in previous roles and my previous experiences, it's always been targeted to certain regions or certain areas. Here, we have this global user base. And with that comes a global set of problems. And so specifically, if we hone into like the brokerage products, often people forget that the first step to using that product is onboarding and going through KYC. And that is a challenge in kind of UK and EAA, but then you globalize that and then you say, hey, actually, we're going to accept identity cards, passports, and documents on a global scale. You suddenly have countries with still paper-based handwritten identity cards that become very problematic when you're trying to automate and create a systematic system for being able to get people through the funnel as fast as possible. So that for me is like super interesting, exciting challenge where how do you create the automation that allows you to scale globally and give everyone a same or very similar experience and crucially lower the barrier to entry?
Yeah, no, that's great. And another area, you know, where blockchain.com did some pioneering work is on our airdrops program. And I think that really, you know, illustrates nicely the point you make about kind of the global scale of, you know, rolling out a new service or feature or product like our airdrops program and how, you know, you just have, you know, incredible potential incoming demand for something from all over the world in a way that, you know, a fintech or challenger bank that's working in very tightly regulated controlled jurisdictions just doesn't have. And
yeah,
that can be tough, huh?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a great example where incentivizing adoption through free money is clearly a great initiative. And we saw huge volumes of customers flocking to our platform. And it's funny because as part of the process of building out the infrastructure to automate and make the onboarding process as efficient as possible, we gave kind of these, what seemed at the time, pretty extreme projections to partners who were in kind of disbelief that actually that was even possible. And it wasn't until we actually rolled this out into production and suddenly everyone's scrambling to try and double down on making sure we can process these KYC reviews as fast as possible. And again, make sure everyone has a great experience. I think that really kind of took a lot of time internally. We got the cross-functional team together, we created a war room, and we had like dedicated focus for a number of weeks to make sure we had a robust, reliable, and resilient system. And also that the customers crucially were getting a great experience. And we brought in a number of partners to work very closely with to improve upon and build upon that success. So that is definitely, one that I will remember and it was many sleepless nights getting that kind of under control.
We apologize for the PTSD. We have a question from Q&A here from John. So the question is, the crypto sector has been plagued by failures of exchanges. Is that likely to continue, or do you believe that current exchanges are more robust than their predecessors?
Yeah, that's a great question. We have seen that a number of notable names continue to be plagued by these issues. I think like that's something that we're very conscious of. And when we launched our exchange, we took a few different approaches to the architecture to try and solve for that up front. But ultimately, the problem with scale, and as that compounds over time, will continue to be this kind of cat and mouse problem that any company that is growing with the space is going to have to keep continue to solve. I think there will be a maturity level where that kind of plateaus. At the moment, there's this kind of trade-off of like how much of your engineering time and team do you focus on core infrastructure work that allows you to keep and continue to scale and building in that buffer in advance versus actually shipping new features and innovating and being kind of ahead of the curve by adding new assets, more interesting products, and more interesting kind of user experience features. So this is the kind of constant battle that we think about internally and is one that I'm sure other companies go through in the same way. But in short, I believe, yeah, we are gonna get to a point where things are gonna be more robust and stable. And I think we have been doing a lot at blockchain.com to ensure that for our customers moving forwards.
Yeah, I mean, I remember back in 2013, 2014, if there was a run-up in crypto, all of them were down simultaneously, yeah. And you couldn't trade anywhere. And so, you know, I do think that like many platforms, when the complexity increases and the scale increases, the challenges get cumulative. So it is tricky, but there have been improvements, although it just, they're incremental and it does take time. Go ahead, Garrett.
Thanks for that. On this question, I just wanted to bring in to the conversation something that came up on a radio recording for the BBC I did earlier. This is going to appear on the Real Story program. And we had a panel, a great panel, including Professor Timothy Massad, who's former chairman of the U.S. Commodity Futures and Trading Commission, and he was bringing in the regulator perspective on crypto. And one of the things he mentioned was how traditional marketplaces are regulated around their uptime and their resiliency, and that crypto isn't currently. And it's a really interesting kind of issue, I think, for the industry to think about. And I just wondered, Lewis, if you could comment on that and what that might mean for the crypto space if those types of regulations are introduced at some point.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think it's something that we as a company are working towards, right, and hoping for, that regulation we see as a positive thing and will have a positive impact on the industry. And actually, it's funny because part of kind of the build out of the team and the architecture, we hired a number of kind of very notable engineers from ex-Wall Street, and they are used to going through that process of like any minute of downtime, they would have to be stood in front of the regulators the next day, really going through in a lot of detail the reasons why it happened, the remediation plan, and how they're going to ensure it doesn't happen again. So this is kind of some of the processes where we're trying to kind of front load internally to make sure we're prepared and in a good place. But it takes time, right? And you need a large team, you need a lot of process to be in place. And so it's definitely a work in progress, but something that we have the expertise internally and are working hard to employ.
Great, Nick. I've got a few more questions, but happy to let you ask a few more or take some more from the audience.
Yeah, we have a couple that have come in. I'll try and weave them in. One of them that came in that I thought was an interesting one is, how do you stay on top and keep up with the technical and economic developments in crypto? I mean, I know you've got a busy job, but part of it is also knowing what's coming next. So how do you do that, and what are your sources for staying informed?
Sure. I mean, I listen to Garrick. That's probably first and foremost. Other than that, I mean, platforms that I use regularly, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and that's probably my primary source. I think in my year in review on Spotify, my podcast listening way outperformed my music, which is kind of probably a surprise for a lot of people. But yeah, I listen to a ton of different podcasts ranging in different topics, but there's tons of great crypto focused ones, economic and economy focused ones, there's finance ones, there's ones about just tech industry, startups, entrepreneurship. And that's a great resource. Other than that, I think like typically Twitter, Reddit, the kind of usual forums and places where a lot of the kind of fast moving news appears first and foremost.
Yep. I feel like I'm in all those same venues and it's still overwhelming.
That's why podcasts are great, right? Because they kind of condense and consolidate and filter out that noise and give you the best bits.
Yeah, I'd love to just echo that, Lewis. I think the podcasting industry has just been incredibly helpful for people who can multitask and walk or do something else while they're listening. And I mean, as someone who I think is a bit older than you guys, I mean, the quality of the conversations that are happening on these podcasts, I think you had to go to, top business schools or be invited, to events like the World Economic Forum to get access to some of these kinds of conversations in the past. Now they're happening out in the open. It's incredible what you can learn, who you can listen to from anywhere in the world with an internet connection. And it's especially, I think, helpful to the crypto space to have so much good content. That's one of the biggest changes from, I think, 2017 to now, is how many great sources of reliable information there are for people to openly access.
And it's funny, actually, like podcasts have gone through their own cycle, right? Because like 15 years ago, podcasts were super popular. And I remember listening to many back then, and they went down this kind of dip, and there weren't really any great ones coming about. And now in the last couple of years, we've seen this resurgence, and there's more content than ever, which is great, really great to see.
Yeah, we try to link to some of our favorite podcasts as well as some of our favorite items that we're reading at the end of each of our monthly outlook. It's the what we're reading, listening to, and watching section. So if you're looking for suggestions from myself and the team on what we find most interesting, that's our clippings that we like to share with everyone.
One of the questions was, do you have any examples of those podcasts? Not to put you on the spot, Garrick, but if you do have a few, you could maybe recommend to people, it'd be good. These two people have asked about that.
Yeah, well, Lewis already kindly plugged our podcast, and we just had this great one with Anthony Scaramucci yesterday. There's some other great ones I would definitely recommend. I think Anthony Pompliano, the Pomp podcast, I think it's one of the most widely listened to, and for good reason. He gets great people on there. He asks a lot of great questions. He's very succinct. You know, I think On the Brink, Nick Carter of CoinMetrics, and is a great podcast as well. That's a little more in depth sometimes, but another, you know, good one if you're looking to get more into the technical weeds. Our own Bitcoin core developer who we fund, Soares Provost, has a podcast with, I'm going to butcher these last names. These Dutch names are always really tough for me. Help me out, maybe Nick or Lewis. Anthony Van Vurdum, who writes for Bitcoin Magazine. Yeah, thank you. They have a great technical deep dive set of podcasts as well. There's just a lot out there. CoinDesk and NLW does a nice job. You know, it's like, you know, Laura Shin, Unconfirmed, is a great one. There's so many now. It's actually, yeah, like a full-time job to try to stay up with the crypto podcasting content, information overload, right? But, you know, you can pick and choose. You see what's, you know, coming and, oh, I want to hear this person who I'm curious about. I think trying to listen to a diversity of voices, listen to industry folk, academics, regulators, hear different perspectives, I think is probably the tip I would give on how to sort through all that.
That's good advice. Okay, well, I think we'll have maybe one or two more questions. I don't want to steal your last question, Garrick, so go ahead, why don't you fire away?
Well, yeah, during times like this where we're overwhelmed, I know we're doing a lot of hiring, you know, we wanted to kind of, Lewis, give you a chance to talk about, you know, the hiring process, what you look for anyone on this podcast who's wanting to work in crypto. And you can also tell a little more of your own story. I think you have already a bit about why you came to blockchain.com, why you wanted to work in crypto. But yeah, talk to us about the hiring opportunity.
Yeah, so right now we are hiring a phenomenal number of engineers across all different teams and functions. So I think like we have a lot of different interesting technical challenges, everything from kind of core distributed systems engineers that know how to build systems that scale in the cloud, to actually like stateful trading systems engineers that know how to build low latency infrastructure that is really kind of tightly tuned to the underlying architecture. So I think there's a lot of different opportunities across the stack. And then we also have, yeah, the engineers on the clients building out our wallet. And so our wallet is quite unique, given it is a fat client and client heavy implementation. We're not just simply wrapping a backend API like many other kind of mobile and web clients. And so there's a lot of kind of deeper understanding and knowledge that you need to have there to kind of be productive and efficient in that role. I think in terms of what we're looking for and what I look for in assessing candidates, we're looking at people that are kind of tenacious, relentless. They're able to really kind of drive forward in problem solving, critical thinking. They really want to understand how to get to the root cause of a problem and then build the most appropriate solution. And so I think if you're a keen builder, you're excited about our space and you're kind of relentless in the pursuit of problem solving, then yeah, we'd love to hear from you. And we're really kind of looking for a range of backgrounds, range of experiences, and a range of different technologies. And for myself, like as mentioned, I think the jumping into a space where you really have the opportunity to not only influence and impact the direction of the company, but also the domain within you're working in, that's super exciting because suddenly the work you're doing is amplified and you can actually reach a much, much larger audience.
Awesome. I mean, the only last question I had was, and I know you can't reveal too much about, you know, too many specifics about what's coming in the pipeline until we're ready to make formal announcements. But we'd love as much as you can to share kind of what you're excited about. I think you've already touched on it, making crypto more accessible and easier to use. And, you know, but anything you can share about the roadmap and what people can look forward to, what you're excited about in the months to come would be great.
Sure. Yeah, I think in abstract terms or general terms, to not give too much away, as you mentioned, I think like democratizing finance is ultimately the big aim here, giving people access in a very easy, simple, transparent, and secure way across all of our platform is kind of the key aim and mission. And I think what we've seen with some of the problems that you raised at the beginning around kind of having these platforms that are ultimately gatekeepers to accessing various different products in the economy, that's problematic, because if one person pulls out, suddenly you no longer have the access you thought you had. And so I think for us, it's about kind of opening up many different doors, wherever you want to kind of like manage everything in a self-sovereign manner and hold your own private keys, or you want to kind of like have a hybrid, or you want to trust a third-party custodian. We want to offer a range of services that really allow you to do that effectively and ultimately build a single platform where you can manage your whole financial life and health, right? So somewhere where you can transact, somewhere that you can share with friends and peers easily, somewhere where you can invest over kind of a longer time horizon, and somewhere that you can actually explore some of the more interesting projects and tokens and assets that are coming out on a daily basis. So I think the whole kind of DeFi space is super interesting. It's very early, but again, our wallet becoming a portal into that world and giving you kind of very easy, consolidated and unified information is something that I'm super excited about building, because there is kind of a lot of disparate sources right now, and it's very fragmented in the space. So I think one of our aims is to like not only lower the barriers to entry and provide a greater user experience, it's also to try and help consolidate and bring all that information together in an easily digestible manner.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much, Lewis. I mean, I think you couldn't have summarized it better. The mission is really one of the things that keeps everybody up here working crazy hours. We really feel that we can help build a more fair and equitable financial system for the whole world and wrap the whole planet in software that makes it easier for everyone to send, receive, secure, trade, and exchange digital forms of money. So, Lewis, thank you and your team for all the relentless hours. You're a tremendous culture carrier here at blockchain.com, and I always like learning from you. So thank you. And Garrick, we wish everyone a wonderful February. Stay safe and tune in for the next market recap in early March. And also please check out the blog, which will have a whole bunch of additional information that we'll be publishing shortly after this, including a deep dive into the on-chain transaction data. And then if you haven't signed up for the podcast yet, please subscribe. We'd love to have you listen. Take care, everyone.
Thanks a lot.